Well, this hour, we're going to take your phone calls with Mark Minkola as we talk about his work, The Way of Miracles. Share your miracle story with us or a question. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, back with Mark Minkola with The Way of Miracles, his book, which comes out next week. Mark, we talked briefly about spirituality and belief in miracles. What if somebody is a pure atheist, a non-believer? Is that person going to get a miracle?
You know, I've had patients who were atheists, and they had recovery experiences that would you and I would describe as miracles. They would refer to them as something else. They wouldn't necessarily say that they're a miracle from anything of the divine nature, obviously, but they think that they're of good fortune and that they've changed energy, they've moved the energy, they believe, they had positive thinking. So there's a different descriptive there, but they're not exempt from being open to the possibility of receiving the grace that we would associate with miracles. I think they just have, like we said earlier, a different reference for it.
Do religious people, like priests and nuns, do they tend to get miracles?
Come
across that?
Yeah, no, I've had a couple people of the cloth that I've worked with over the years that have had miracle recoveries, and I think that it's more of a natural deduction on their behalf. I think for them it's more of a natural thing to expect, to go through the acceptance and the expectancy and the creation component of it. I think that they're believers predominantly because their faith is strong. And I think that because they have a religious connection, that faith actually strengthens their creational component. I think they go beyond acceptance and expectancy into the possibility of creation because of the depth of their faith.
What if a miracle occurs to somebody who prays to the Almighty, promises something, whatever it may be, I'm going to be good, I'm going to donate money to the church, whatever it is, and doesn't follow through after the miracle has occurred, then what happens?
It depends on whether you believe in karma.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think that there's, you know, in my world, in my belief system, there's such things as karma, dharma, and moksha. Moksha is liberation from karma. But karma is the kind of thing that I think you're talking about right now, that if you try to make a deal with the divine, so to speak, and you don't follow through, it's my sense that you're gonna have to contend with that at some level, at some point in time. And that's just my belief in karma. But not everybody believes in karma, so I think that you get a different answer from somebody who rejects the notion of karma.
Can the devil create a miracle?
It's a great question. I think you'd have to answer that from a religious perspective. And my perspective is more spiritual. So, I mean, I think of good and evil as being kind of, I think of the Tai Chi circle. I work with Taoism a lot, and I think that the Tai Chi circle is something that comes to mind as being an integration of dark and light. The separation is an illusion, that you can't separate the dark from the light, the bad from the good. And they kind of work together. They essentially create and they weave a process in place that actually becomes part of the equilibrium of life and the all-inclusive componentry of life. So I think that I can say evil and good go together. And I think that they produce together the potential for what we call miracles or grace. I don't get into conceptualizing the devil.
Let's take some calls here, Mark, and see what we've got. Questions for you, maybe miracle stories as well. First-time caller Brian in Tampa, Florida. Welcome, Brian.
Hey, George. Great talking to you. And nice to see you, Dr. Minkola. I have a question, and also maybe a miracle as well. I I'll tell you what the miracle is, but I don't feel like I've really turned the corner where I need to be to where I want to be, like we were talking about with Parkinson's, where I was like 3 miles a day. I have muscular dystrophy. I was diagnosed with it in 2016, and it's pretty bad. I had 800 repeats. My talking muscular dystrophy was 800 repeats in my body, over 1,000 would be congenital, which means I'd be dead. I'm 40, going to be 48 years old in August. It didn't start off that way. I mean, I did start off just mid-muscular dystrophy. I had 3 ulcers I didn't know I had. And then I had a gallbladder removed. It was rupturing when they removed it. And then I was getting over that, and I started having falls and missteps. And not just didn't faint, but the test result I had muscular dystrophy. Since that time, I've had numerous surgeries. I had an ICD put in my heart.
Wow.
I had to, you know, just as a preventive measure, because people are like, why talk about your dystrophy? Had their hearts stop beating.
You're a walking miracle, Brian.
Well, perhaps, you know, I mean, my doctor said I'm an enigma, because I still live alone. I actually had a couple of years before the pandemic. I had to take my parents home because I stopped even digest food. I went from 180 pounds to 120 pounds, almost died then, too.
Oh, my God.
And thanks to some very good doctors and some very, after a year, they found out I had my pancreas wasn't creating digestive enzymes, and I had to give them a special medication for that.
Well, let me ask Mark this. Mark, somebody's watching him. Somebody obviously has got his goodwill at heart.
There's no question. He's being watched over. He's being sent a tremendous amount of grace. There's no question about the fact that he's blessed, and he's had repeated miracles. He's had more than one miracle. He's benefited from some prayer, perhaps some grace, some positive intention, some love from people around him, and I think that he's benefited immeasurably from it. And obviously, he's of such good fortune. He's had multiple healings and multiple miracle experiences. God bless you, Brian. That's wonderful.
Super, super, indeed. And how important is love in this equation?
It's my personal belief that it's the most important thing of all. And I think that the key is, when we think of love, we tend to think of relationship love. We tend to think of a different concept of love than I think was required for miracles to take place. I think love at a miracle level is a very different thing. It's more soulful. It's more deep. It has a greater dimension to it. It has an unlimited componentry to it. It has a deep caring level to it. I think that there's a compassion level to it. And I think that there's a feeling that when you want to help somebody to such an extent, somebody who's perhaps suffering from some disease or some ill fortune, and you can feel in your heart that you'd like to just wrap your hands around them and just make it all clear, make it all go away, make it all heal overnight. That compassion that you have, that loving compassion, is such a deep, powerful experience. The energy of love at that level, the healing level, is just unparalleled. It's a very different kind of love. It's a much deeper kind of love.
Absolutely. Let's go to Caleb in Oceanside, California. Welcome to the program. Hi, Caleb.
Hey, what's up?
Good to have you with us.
Thank you. So I told the guy I called, I had a story about our bus and how I turned, like how our lives just got turned around with that. But I was thinking there's actually like a whole progression of like individual like miracles, I guess you could say, that have made up the last like year and a half of my life. And I wanted to talk about something a little bit different, and if that's okay.
Sure, go ahead.
Perfect, cool. So I met my spouse, Bast. We've called him before. I don't know if you remember or not. But we had met in 2016 and went like a couple of years, you know, like living across the country from each other, just talking small talk here and there on the internet. And we ended up meeting, talking again in October 2019. And I ended up flying out to California across the country and got met them in person again on November 7th. We ended up getting married on the 21st of November, right? The marriage, the wedding, was the strangest synchronicity, coincidence. I don't know what you want to call it. So, you know, you need to have a couple of people for your marriage. You got to have the guy who's ordained, whoever that is, and you need a witness, you know, to sign the document. And so...
And you and her, four people, right?
Yeah. And it's crazy. So we get to the courthouse and we go up there and we get all the initial paperwork and stuff. And so it's ready to go, you know, bring to the ceremony or whatever. We didn't really plan anything. It was a spontaneous kind of wedding situation. And we went out, we're in San Diego and we're in front of the courthouse. There's like, you know, like all the boats, sailboats parked up and stuff. And when we had pulled up and parked in the parking spot, we noticed the guy standing there painting the sailboats, you know, like an artist or whatever. And didn't really think anything of it. We went inside and did the first part of the paperwork, and now we need a witness because it's just me and Bast and our one-time friend that we brought with. So we're trying to figure out, who do we get as a witness? We're looking around, and I said, the painter. Let's go get the painter.
The painter.
Let's go see if the painter will be our witness. So we go down here, we're walking down, we're like, all right, cool. So we're going to walk past them. We're not going to say nothing. We're just going to walk and, you know, go to the car real quick. We're going to, you know, like, smoke, you know, take shots, whatever. And then we'll press the question. So we get to the car, we're chilling, we're trying to figure out how to approach this man with the question. And somebody says, I wonder what his name is. So we're sitting in the car and we all settle on our names. I settled on Richard. I said, Richard.
And you're guessing. You're all guessing?
We're all just guessing, completely guessing. Never met the guy, never talked to the guy. Didn't have any reason to even think or acknowledge him, aside from him just standing there, and we walked past. So figuring out how we're going to ask the question, and Bass settles on the name Paul. It's all right, cool, fantastic. So we finish up what we're doing. We get out of the car and walk up there and approach him and ask him, hey, you know, like, we're getting married here today. Did you want to be our witness? Because we got to fill out the paperwork, et cetera. He's excited. He's like, sure, I was just packing up to get ready to go. And everything, and so enthusiastically, you know, he offers to help us, and we asked what his name was, of course, because he's got to fill it on the paper. His
sure.
name is Paul.
Oh.
How does that happen? How does it happen? How does it happen? All that kind of lines up, you know, and I don't want to bore you with the details, but we got married, and in front of the sailboats, right? And the other day, my mom called me on the phone and says, hey, you know, your grandpa is in the Navy, stationed out in the base down there, and wanted to know about the Star of India. Star of India, I don't really know. I'll check with it. Turns out that's the name of the sailboat that we got married in front of. You know, they have a dock there, like a museum or something, I suppose. Supposedly it's like haunted or whatever, but just weird synchronicity.
Weird things.
I don't know if you want to call it a miracle.
Well, let's check in with Mark on this. Mark, I don't believe in coincidences. I think fate turns things and makes them happen. I just don't believe in coincidences.
You know, I had lunch with Deepak Chopra one day, and I mentioned the word synchronicity, and he said, no, Mark, it's synchrodestiny.
Yeah, and that's probably
that
what happened to Caleb.
And I think Caleb, exactly my point. I think Caleb went through a synchrodestiny experience, no question about it.
Yeah, it definitely was not a chance coincidence thing. The guy happened to be Paul. No, these things are already created, aren't they? Good luck, Caleb. Keep checking in with us. And you're our only Caleb who ever calls the show, so we remember you. Joe, east of the Rockies, let's go to Long Island, New York. Welcome to the program, Joseph.
Yeah, Mark, you mentioned that this is a process. I think sometimes people don't see it that way. They don't see that they want that quick leap into the healing. But my question is, you said a doubting tendency or like a doubting Thomas. Realistically, people might have that tendency. Like, how do you deal with that tendency and then still try and go to the positive side to a degree? And then do you have any suggestions for detox, people that are trying to detox?
Of course. Great questions, Joe. Number one, I think that one of the most important things we can do for people who are not inclined to believe in miracles or the possibility of miracles, and they tend to reject them, doubters, skeptics, whatever you want to call them, I think you need to kind of just have open dialogue. I think we're focusing on the possibility, and to just keep our eyes open and just observe and just to hold the process to the test. In other words, I'd tell that person, if they would simply think about somebody that they love who needs the help, somebody who's sick, somebody who's had a hard time, somebody who needs the blessing, somebody who needs the miracle, somebody they care about, and to just spend a little bit of time observing them. As you send them energy, talk to them about it, tell them you're sending them energy, you care about them, you're trying to heal them, trying to help them, trying to make a difference in their life, hoping for a miracle for them, praying for a miracle for them, just out of love and care. And then I think the objective is to just observe together what happens and just continue to dialogue with it and kind of nurture the process. And just as you go along, acknowledge the fact that things are getting a little better, a little better, a little better. Maybe you're having a miracle experience here that we should acknowledge. You know, I think you can work into it. I think you can evolve. You can develop it gradually over a period of time. That's number one. Number two, sure, there's a number of different ways to detox. Are you talking about detoxing as a correlate to addiction and all, or are you just talking about cleaning the body up?
I have a particular friend that took one of these vaccines, and she's regretting it and wants to detox. She has a powder. She's taking garlic, cinnamon. You know, I've heard rock rose as a
possible. That's a Bach flower remedy. That's a great remedy. But my sense is that there's a product called a company called Des Bio, D-E-S-B-I-O, Des Bio, and they make a product called Chemtox, C-H-E-M-T-O-X, Chemtox. They're homeopathic drops. They work really, really well. And you just take them as directed. That's Des Bio Chemtox drops. They work really nicely.
Have you heard that a lot of people have had reactions from the COVID shot or not?
Yes, I have. I work with a lot of people. I mean, it seems like every day of the week we have somebody coming into our offices who's had a negative reaction. A lot of simple stuff, a lot of sore arms, a lot of problems like that. But we've had a lot of people who've had problems with nausea, vomiting, migraine headaches, things like that. So we do see a lot of it.
I just hope this variant they're talking about isn't much.
That's a little intimidating right now. It's not the kind of thing we want to be hearing about.
No, it is. And let's talk again about prayer. Where do angels fit in when you pray?
Well, I think from my perspective, the universe is a big place. And I think that we talk about the material universe and the spiritual universe. And I think the spiritual universe has spirits, angels, divine beings of a variety of different sorts. And I think that there's a lot of interaction. My sense is there's a lot of interaction between the spirit realm and the material realm. And when we pray in our material body and our material being, we pray spiritually. And I think our prayers are answered from the perspective of energy that's delivered from the spirit realm to the material realm. I think those are, it's like a transference process. So I think that angels, and I think that spiritual guides, spiritual beings of all sorts who are here to assist us, to help us. And I believe many of them have been deceased relatives, people we've loved in the past that are spending
there to help
helping
us
and nurturing us and helping our healing process and trying to help us create miracles. I think that's something we haven't talked about yet. My sense is that I've had a lot of experiences with patients that have actually spoken about having visions of their deceased mother coming back when they were sick, and the miracle came from the spirit realm, from the deceased relative, the spirit of the deceased relative, into the material life and made a difference with their sicknesses. So I've seen a lot of that happen as well, so it's pretty remarkable.
The spirit world tends to step up to the plate, doesn't it?
It sure does. There's no question about that. And I think that, again, we're raised for the most part to believe in the material properties of life and to believe in matter-based living. But I think that you're absolutely right, George. I think that we've all had many spiritual experiences, and spirit tends to step up to the plate indeed, no question about it.
Is it a miracle, Mark, if somebody loses their job and then on their way home all depressed and just unhappy, they get a call from someone who says, we've got this job offer for you, it's come in?
I believe it is, and I believe that's what I was saying earlier, that there's so many different ways that miracles avail themselves. They're not always tumor remissions. They're not always dramatic. I think sometimes they're just like you say. They're turnarounds at the job experience on the way home, like you say.
Yeah.
I think those kind of things happen more continuous, more readily, and I think that it's all part of the same beautiful process of transference from the spiritual world, and I think that it's karma. We talked about that a little while ago. I think there's a number of different issues that are being cultivated to our advantage that produce a result.
Mark, we're going to take a quick break and come back with final phone calls with you in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. The name of the book, The Way of Miracles, Assessing Your Super Consciousness. Websites are all linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Next hour, psychic and medium Michelle White Dove joins us to talk about things we can expect this year and for the years to come, and then we'll take your calls and readings later on in the program. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you. Our final segment with Mark Mincola. Mark, how do people watch the movie, The Way of the Miracles?
They can actually go to a website. It's thewayofmiracles.com, and that'll link them up. And actually, there's advanced sales that are taking place as we speak. And again, like I said, next Friday, I think it's the 26th, if I'm not mistaken, is the official release date. So they can go to thewayofmiracles.com.
Yeah, 25th is Friday, so the 26th
there you
is
go.
Okay, let's go back to final calls. Kimberly in Springfield, Illinois is with us. Welcome to the program. Hi, Kimberly. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. How are you guys doing?
Okay, thank you.
Hi.
Go ahead, Kim.
I just wanted to share, it's kind of a simple story, but I find it very gracious and a blessing to me that I felt my son had a guardian angel with him at 10 months old. My husband was stationed at Fort Irwin, California, and we lived on post, and we lived upstairs. And there was about 20, I would say, cement steps to go down, and there was about a foot in between each step. And my husband thought I had Austin, and I thought he had Austin, and I went to use the restroom. And when I came out, I went to look for him, and like I said, my husband thought I had him, and I thought he had him. And when I opened the door to look down the balcony, I swallowed my stomach because I thought for sure I was going to see my baby just, on the down on the, ground. It just wasn't a good feeling, but we went down the steps, and he was towards the end of the grass, not in the road, but close to the road, and he was safe. And I knew the only way that he could have got down there, he wasn't even walking. I just knew the only way that he could have got down there was a guardian angel. And I just knew it. I knew he had a guardian angel with him.
He scooped down and swept him up.
Yeah, I was so thankful. It was like the happiest moment in my life.
Would you call that a miracle, Mark?
I would. I think that miracles, as I said tonight earlier, miracles manifest in so many different ways. They're not always a dramatic healing or dramatic recovery. Sometimes they're just a dramatic experience, such as Kimberly's. And I think that that's definitely a miracle. And I think that she was clearly blessed, and she received a great miracle. And I think that there's nothing, no greater nightmare than to think there's something wrong with your children. You think
it's not horrible.
Safe. There could be something problematic. You could lose track of them or whatever. I think that she has experienced a beautiful miracle, no question about it.
Mark in Baltimore, Maryland's with us. Hey, Mark, welcome.
Thank you, George. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
I've got this little book here by Norman Vincent Peale. It's called Expect a Miracle and Make Miracles Happen. And it talks about something that's called the miracle principle. And I can only tell my own story. About a month ago, I would have to say, well, I had a serious health issue, life-threatening. It could have been terminal. And everything about my life was going downhill to the point where I almost thought that I didn't have any reason to live.
Jeez.
And then through faith, family, God, and Jesus, I prayed and prayed and prayed for a miracle. And I was saved. A miracle happened to me. And that's because I asked for it, I prayed for it, and it happened, and I needed divine intervention, and I knew I was at that point, and I received that divine intervention. And ever since then, my life has done nothing but take a turn for the upwards, and I'm eternally thankful to the, the divinity aspect of it. And I'd just like to get your thoughts about that, sir.
It's a beautiful story.
Great story.
Thank you.
And every time you call, Mark, you seem upbeat, which is fantastic. But go ahead, Mark.
Yes. I mean, as I said, I learned through my own mistakes that sometimes when we're at our darkest moments in our lives, we tend to push those away from us that we really need with us. And that's when I discovered that I really did have part of a family that I didn't think I had when they came back to me.
It's a great story.
But you accepted the possibility. You perhaps even expected it. I think that you had a positive belief, a sense of faith, and I think that mattered hugely in your experience. I think that made a big difference, Mark.
Positive thinking is important, isn't it?
Radically so. Absolutely. No question about it. Positive thinking is a huge part of the process. Expectancy and positive thinking actually change your neurology. There have been studies that have measured the anterior cingulate cortex in the brain. And we actually alter we affect our nervous system, our neurology, by having belief, by having a sense of expectancy. It's very powerful.
Let's go to Maria in Illinois. Welcome to the show. Hi, Maria.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
So I had a couple questions. I have a lady friend. She and her husband are both Christians. And about a year and a half ago, they came over, and her husband, well, they both prayed, but her husband laid hands on my eyes. I'm going blind because of diabetes. And I've had several eye surgeries, but they haven't done any good. I'm still going blind. Anyway, he had prayed for my eyesight, and he claims that the Holy Spirit told him that I would be healed, that I would see again, so on and so forth. And I thought, you know, so I basically questioned him and basically said, you mean that my spiritual eyesight would be healed? Because I'm not, I don't consider myself a spiritual or religious person, either one at all. I'm very logical.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, no, I prayed specifically for your eyesight. And I'm like, well, maybe God just means that, you know, in my next life, if I go to heaven, I'll be healed then. He's like, no, I felt that the Holy Spirit told me that you would be healed in this life, in this body on earth now. But yet he said that God never gave him a time frame or said how it was going to happen. That was a year and a half ago. My vision has gotten worse and worse and worse over the last year and a half. And but yet his wife, who's a lady friend of mine, she said that she felt that it would only happen if I, you know, repented of my sins, became born again, and had faith and all that. And I feel like, you know, there's a lot of Christian people out there and religious and spiritual people that they never get healed. They're still in wheelchairs. They're still blind. They're still this, that, or the other. And, you know, why would God heal me when I'm not even spiritual, you know, or religious? And I have a lot of doubt. I want to believe, but it's been a year and a half.
All right. How do you change a skeptic, Mark?
Well, once again, I think you need to, first of all, begin by exercising the possibility. Tap into the fact that through continuous prayer, positive belief, tuning into the visualizing, like I said earlier, visualizing the healing process, just to work with it, to pray for it, to push the energy as much in that direction as you possibly can, to see if you can actually influence the situation to improve, to get better gradually, even over a period of time. I just think that belief is important, as we said earlier. I think belief is the beginning of the process. If you can turn your belief into expectancy, it gets even more powerful. But I think that the only way to go through that process gradually is step by step, and to continue to pour the energy into it, but to have that faith, to have that belief. And I think that's what creates the possibility at a reasonable level, at a higher level. I think we need to have the faith, the belief, and I think we need to exercise it in baby steps.
If there are 10 people expecting or needing miracles, how many do you think occur? What percent?
3.
Just 3%?
Yep.
That's it?
Three of the 10, 30%.
30%. That's still low.
I think that when you're talking about a world full of people, that's a lot of miracles. And I'm convinced that we can actually increase those numbers. That's part of the reason why I wrote the book, and part of the reason why I wrote about and made the film as well. And I think the film and the book essentially talk about specific cases. Like I said, there are specific patients that tell their stories in detail. And when you get through the film and you get through the book and you start to realize that there's a lot of people like these people that you've just read about or viewed, and there's a world full of these people that have actually made differences and have had the experiences. And many of them were skeptics. They didn't believe in the process at all. But they were surprised to find that a miracle did take place.
Well, what happened to the other 70%?
I think there's still a work in progress. I think, you know, some of those people, let's say 20%, reject the notion altogether. They're just not inclined to believe in miracles. I think there's another percentage that actually is a work in progress. They accept the possibility, but they don't have a strong faith or a strong belief in it. Then you move into the higher realm of expectancy and creation. Like I said earlier, there's rejection, there's acceptance, there's expectancy, and there's creativity. So I think that when people move into the expectancy and the creation component of it, I think they're moving in a higher level. I think they're moving a lot more energy. They're, as you said earlier, their belief component is much stronger.
Yeah.
So I think that there's a lot of work in progress. I think there's some people that are experiencing miracles, 30%. And I think that there's another percentage that's working on developing an expectancy component. Maybe haven't quite arrived yet, like I said, a work in progress. And I think there's a certain percentage of people that are moving from expectancy into creation. So I think that there's a lot of people that need to hear more about this message. I think that's, again, why we've put the book and the film out there. And there's people that are going through it, that are experiencing it. And I think we need to make more of a connection with the reality of miracles. I think there's more of them happening than we think. And I think that there's a lot more that can happen if we continue to discuss it.
Let's go to Will, Raleigh, North Carolina. Welcome to the program, Will. Go ahead.
Yes. Hey, good morning. How y'all doing?
Good, Will.
Yes, I got two miracles. One was right before I graduated from high school in the 80s, my mom, my sister, my nephew, and myself was involved in a terrible car accident where someone was driving like 120 miles down the hill and ran into the back of us. We was going west, and our car ended up facing east. And we all survived. And we survived that terrible accident. The car was kind of like torn half in two, and the tank flew off. And everybody thought it was a bomb, but it was a car accident.
Wow.
And then my next miracle is I was involved in a car accident around 2005, and I had a severe head injury, and I ended up in ICU for three days. I went back to work. They stripped me of some of my job responsibilities. They put me over transplant medical records and labs, and I started remembering all of the patient information. I was walking around like a chart room, like I could see a patient and know exactly what was wrong with them.
Jeez, just with your memory. It's amazing.
And the doctors was like, you know, I can't believe this. What's going on? And then they interviewed me for about a week, just how much I knew. I didn't even go look in the chart. I could tell them exactly what the patient was going through.
Were you specifically, well, religious or spiritual?
Yes, very, very spiritual. As a matter of fact, I work at night now. And I enjoy my job. That's why I can listen to Coast to Coast. I work three nights out of the week, and very spiritual. Matter of fact, I pray all the time. I keep my mind elevated. I don't try to get too involved in too many things other than spiritual stuff.
How much of that, Mark, helped him? What do you think?
I was just going to say, Will's been through repeated miracles. He didn't just have one miracle. Will seems like he's opened up to the prospect of plural miracles. And I attribute that to his belief. I was going to actually ask him. I'm glad he answered, because it sounds like he's a believer. It sounds like he has great faith and prays a great deal. And he's engaged at a spiritual level. He's moving energy at deeper levels, and I think that's the key to the whole process. I think he's creating a higher probability factor by being a believer and by working at keeping that positive energy flowing.
Mark, will miracles happen when you least expect them?
No question about that. I think that that's one of the most powerful experiences. So many patients we've worked with over the years. I mean, I'm always stunned in a happy way when I hear these great stories of patients who didn't expect anything, and were just lo and behold stunned to find out that they had a radical turnaround, a radical recovery, a radical miracle experience. It's truly wonderful.
It truly is. So tell folks how they can get your book next week.
Yep, they can actually contact either Beyond Words. Beyond Words is the publisher, or you can actually go to Amazon, or you can actually, for the film, go to thewayofmiracles.com.
Super. And keep in touch with us, Mark, and let us know when the next work is done, okay?
Thank you, George. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Miracles. It happens, folks. They really occur. It doesn't happen to everybody, as he was saying, 30%. I think it might happen even a little higher, a little even higher percent. Next up, we're going to be talking with Michelle White Dove. Spirituality Speaking is the name of her book. She is a psychic and medium. Guess what we're going to talk about? Then in our last hour, she does do readings So we'll do that with you, too, on Coast to Coast AM. So don't touch your dial. We'll be right back, right here on Coast to Coast AM.